ETF Prime is hosted by investment advisors at the ETF Store and sponsored by Legg Mason. Legg Mason's sponsorship is not an endorsement nor a recommendation for any product or service. Legg Mason Investor Services LLC is not affiliated with the ETF Store, ETF.com, or any of its affiliates. The ETF Store is not affiliated with ETF.com or any of its affiliates. ETF.com's participation in this program should not be construed as an endorsement or an indication by ETF.com of the value of any ETF Store product or service. This program is for informational purposes only and does not constitute investment advice. All investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. The ETF Store owns and is responsible for all program content. Visit ETFstore.com for more information.
Legg Mason is a leading global investment company committed to helping clients reach their financial goals through long-term actively managed strategies. Legg Mason offers a broad range of equity, fixed income, alternative, and cash strategies worldwide. It is comprised of a diverse family of specialized investment managers, each with their own independent approach to research and analysis, and has over a century of experience in identifying opportunities and delivering astute investment solutions to clients. To learn more, please visit leggmason.com.
Now it's time for ETF Prime, where we discuss everything you need to know about exchange-traded funds and the world of investing. Whether you're an investing expert or just starting out, Nate and Connor will help you get up to date on what's happening on Wall Street and show you how exchange-traded funds can help lower your investment costs, reduce your tax bill, and allow you to take advantage of investment opportunities around the world. And now, the host of ETF Prime, Nate Geraci.
Welcome to ETF Prime. Nate Geraci alongside Connor Kelly. As always, thank you so much for joining us. I also want to thank the exclusive sponsor of ETF Prime, Legg Mason. So today we're going to focus on a topic that seems to generate more debate than just about any other area of investing, and that's gold. And I would say with the rise of crypto assets like Bitcoin, of course, the price declines notwithstanding there, but with the rise of crypto, I think gold's role has been called into even greater question, especially among younger investors. You know, should you own gold in a portfolio? Is it a store of value? Is it a diversifier, a hedge? And if so, what's the best way to own gold? Well, we're going to try to cover it all today, and we have three excellent guests to help us do so. We'll first be joined by ETF.com's Laura Krieger. We'll look at gold ETF flows, the gold ETF price war, how physical gold ETFs compare to gold miners, and then we'll certainly get her thoughts on whether she thinks Bitcoin is impacting gold demand. We'll then be joined by Matt Bartolini, head of Spider America's research. Of course, State Street offers the most popular physical gold ETF, the Spider Gold Shares, ticker GLD. They also offer sort of a miniature version of GLD, the Spider Gold Mini Shares, ticker GLDM. So we'll dive into both of those and hear Matt's thoughts on the role of gold in a portfolio. And then we'll close the show today with one of my favorite resources on the gold market, Juan Carlos Artiguez, Director of Investment Research at the World Gold Council. He's going to discuss the latest gold demand trends report, which just came out last week, and we'll get his thoughts on crypto as well. Connor, I know we say this every single time we talk about gold, but nothing seems to stir more passion among investors than whether or not to own gold in a portfolio. And I actually think that crypto is now only enhancing that debate.
Boy, it really has, and particularly with younger investors. If you asked, you know, a bunch of 25 or 35-year-olds if they'd rather own gold versus something like Bitcoin, I think you'd be surprised by the answers, especially if you would compare that to, you know, a bunch of 55 to 65-year-olds. But look, gold is interesting as an investment because it marches to the beat of its own drum, which is what you want when you talk about a diversifying asset. And with, you know, pure play gold ETFs to gold miners to junior gold miners, there's no shortage of options for investing in gold with ETFs. And it's been a while since we've discussed gold, but with the tough fourth quarter we saw in equities globally, and in particular in the U.S., gold started to perform well. And I think it's a really good time to do a deep dive on gold. And like you said, Nate, we've got a fantastic lineup of guests to do that with.
As always, if you have questions or comments, you can visit etfprime.com or you can find us on Twitter at Nate Geraci and at C. Kelly 1980. Let's start today with ETF.com's Laura Krieger.
Time now for our weekly chat with the experts at ETF.com, the world's leading independent authority on ETFs.
People have been saying there are too many mutual funds since the 80s.
For all the talk of smart beta, they haven't pulled in huge assets. The active managers are showing up in the ETF space.
Laura, obviously you're not here to dispense investment advice, but I am curious, as we get into this conversation, are you a believer in gold? Do you think this is something investors should at least consider in a portfolio?
Consider yes. So there are actually, I think, fairly solid investment cases for holding some gold, though maybe if you believe that it's going to save you in the apocalypse, you might want to consider something else. Gold tends to rise when the dollar is falling, so it can, hedge against poor economic times. It tends to, hedge against rises in inflation, but it's by no means a perfect hedge, but it can do some good in that regard as well. And like you mentioned earlier, it's an uncorrelated asset, barely even correlates to just plain old commodities, so that can help diversify your portfolio a little bit. I mean, if you want to have a small allocation of gold in your portfolio, not a terrible investment idea. Not a bad investment idea.
All right.
One thing.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say there's all of that said, there are a couple of drawbacks to owning gold that I think tend to get glossed over by investors. Specifically, it doesn't pay interest like a bond does. So if you're taking money from your fixed income allocation to buy gold, you've got to bolster your income somehow, and it has a different tax consequence, especially the gold ETFs are treated like collectibles. So that can be kind of a surprise, too. So, you've just got to look at the full picture if you're interested in investing in gold.
Yeah, and I think your point on it not paying interest, that's the one that I would say gold naysayers seem to point to the most. I always think of Warren Buffett, saying you can sit gold on your mantle, it doesn't do anything. You can look at it, it doesn't do anything, not a productive asset. Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, a lot I want to cover. Let's maybe start with physical gold ETF flows. And I have to mention, one of my big predictions for 2019 was actually that gold ETFs would shine. I just thought, given the overall market environment, we would see a pickup in interest for physical gold ETFs. How am I looking so far?
You're looking pretty like the cat that ate the canary, I bet. Because, physical gold ETFs, they have been hoovering up the assets. So of all the gold ETFs, there's 30-odd gold ETFs in the market. GLD is the one that has taken in the most inflows year to date. It's brought in $1.2 billion since January 1st. IAU, the iShares Gold Trust, that's in second place with about $510 million in inflows. And then Granite Shares' BAR is in third place with $120 million. And, those numbers aren't really all that unexpected, I think. Investors tend to gravitate towards physical gold whenever they feel that, one, the dollar is going to be weakening or tanking or whatever, and two, that they have some sort of uncertainty about the broader economy. So to the first point, the Fed has said that it's going to start slowing down its interest rate hikes, which that's bound to put some pressure on the dollar, right? And then to the second point, we've seen a slew of kind of disappointing economic data come out globally. We've also got Brexit on the horizon. We've got, government shutdown that just happened, the longest ever, and then possibly another government shutdown staring at us next week. So it's an uncertain time. And in uncertain times, folks tend to go back to gold. So, year to date, you're looking pretty smart.
That's exactly what I wanted to hear. We'll see how my other predictions do. All right, so you mentioned GLD, and we're actually going to chat with State Street's Matt Barnolini here in just a minute. Of course, they offer the Spider Gold shares. And then last year, they launched a cheaper version of this, the Spider Gold mini shares, ticker GLDM. So GLD charges 40 basis points. GLDM is at 18 basis points. And I would say clearly there's a fee war going on in gold ETFs right now. The Granite Shares ETF you mentioned, BAR, they chopped their fee to 0.1749%. which we can talk about
that.
That
4.9 is important.
The Perth Mint launched a gold ETF, ticker AAAU. So that's tied with GLDM at 18 basis points. And then back in December, SGOL, the ETFs physical Swiss gold shares, they undercut them all, dropping their fee to 0.17%. I guess I should also note the second most popular gold ETF, the iShares Gold Trust, IAU, that's at 25 basis points. So you mentioned the flows into GLD and IAU, but I'm curious, are you seeing these fee cuts show up in the flows at all? Are they making a difference?
It is such an interesting question, because you would think they would, and they are. They are sort of. You know, if you take a look at GLD versus IAU, which is the classic, you know, big 800-pound gorilla in the room versus, you know, this plucky upstart, which is funny to even think about IAU as a plucky upstart anymore. But IAU, over the past 12 months, took in the second largest number of inflows at $1.3 billion. And GLD, on the other hand, it actually lost the most amount of flows in gold ETFs. It lost about $739 million in outflows. So clearly there were some people that were coming back to gold last year, and they opted for IAU, the cheaper option, instead of GLD. But it's not really fair to say that, you know, all of IAU's inflows would have otherwise gone to gold, right, or gone to GLD, because they're used for different things. Now, setting that aside and talking about the lower cost options on the market, you know, you mentioned all these fee cuts, and I wanted to highlight SGOL, SGOL in particular, because it cut its fees to the lowest in the market. But ever since then, it hasn't really seen much in terms of flows. It's only brought in about $43 million since its fee cut. And, I mean, that's not bad, but it's not really the game changer, I think, that Aberdeen was really hoping to get from that. And in the meantime, BAR has brought in three times that over the same period. So there are certainly standouts. BAR and GLDM over the past 12 months have brought in a fair amount of money. BAR has brought in $423 million, and GLDM has brought in $461 million. So that's not bad for new funds. There is a caveat, however, and that's that, you know, $400 million here, $400 million there, it's big for these new funds, but in terms of GLD numbers, it's nothing. GLD has $35 billion in assets. If it loses a couple $100 million here and a couple $100 million there, I don't think anybody at State Street is going to really be crying into their milk. You know, it's not really something that they're going to be too worried about. So
yeah, and I think if you look at assets, certainly with GLD and IAU, you know, for larger investors, institutional investors, that liquidity is something that is still extremely important. Because I have been a bit surprised. BAR's done really well. But some of the other small, you mentioned SGOL, I am surprised with a fee cut that maybe it didn't garner a few more in assets. All right, I want to make sure we touch on the gold mining ETFs. And the top two here are the VanEck Vectors Gold Miners ETF, ticker GDX, and then the VanEck Vectors Junior Gold Miners ETF, GDXJ. I guess first, how do you think investors should look at the gold miners compared to physical gold ETFs?
So gold miners exist in this sort of weird liminal space between gold, the metal, and equity markets. They're exposed to both. I think it's best to think of gold miners as kind of a leveraged play on gold, but it's also one that tends to trade with a lag. So gold miners always, if you think about it, they go into action as a direct result of whatever the gold price is doing. If the gold price goes up, then they tend to do more mining. If the gold price goes down, then they tend to pare back on it. So, you know, it's not really quite the same thing as investing in the metal itself. So in terms of gold miner flows, I think it's interesting that over the long period, you know, 12-month period, GDX, the gold miners ETF, blew away the rest of the gold ETFs in terms of flows. The fund brought in $3.5 billion since last February, you know, well outpacing IAU. And then the third largest gold ETF in terms of flows was Nugget, NUGT, the triple leveraged gold miners ETF. And that brought in $614 million in flows. And I think that's because, you know, for much of 2018, the stock market wasn't really doing all that bad. It was more volatile, but it was still going up. And it wasn't until the fourth quarter that everything started to tank. So, and when the economy looks good, people tend to go to gold miners over gold because gold miners are that equity play. So,
you know, we talk about the fee war and the physical gold ETFs. I was actually looking over the weekend, and I saw that iShares has a gold miner ETF that's a bit cheaper than the VanEck products. So the iShares MSCI Global Gold Miners ETF, which has a great ticker symbol, by the way, RING, but it only has a fraction of the assets that GDX and GDXJ have. Why do you think price hasn't mattered more here?
Frankly, I think it's a matter of first mover status, right? So RING launched in 2012, long after GDXJ had established itself as the king of the space and far, you know, very much the most liquid option in terms of gold miner ETFs. And GDXJ is also a trader's instrument, and I think its enduring popularity kind of shows that people, investors tend to think of gold miners more as a tactical play than maybe something you buy and hold, and that may be hurting RING as well in terms of accruing assets. But that's just my instinct. I don't have any hard evidence for that.
Yeah, I just thought it was interesting in looking at the assets. All right, we have about 2 minutes left here. Now, you and I have a little bit of a running joke. Anytime you're on the show, we always somehow seem to talk Bitcoin. And I'm going to make sure that we continue that trend. So I want to play a quick clip. The CEO of VanEck, Jan VanEck, was on CNBC a couple of weeks ago. Take a listen to this.
I do think that Bitcoin pulled a little bit of demand away from gold last year in 2017. Interestingly, we just pulled 4,000 Bitcoin investors, and their number one investment for 2019 is actually gold. So, you know, gold lost to Bitcoin, and now, you know, it's going the other way.
All right. So here's a question I have for you. Do you agree with that, that there's some sort of interplay between gold and Bitcoin demand?
Oh, absolutely. I think that there's, for a certain type of investor, gold and Bitcoin are sort of fungible in the sense that they're both currencies that are entirely divorced from any sort of government deciding, you know, what the value is. It's not really got a real world value except for what people assign to it, right? So if you look at the peak of Bitcoin prices in 2017, which Jan VanEck was talking about, when Bitcoin hit 19,000, there was actually a noticeable dip in the amount of inflows going into GLD at the same time. GLD, which usually trades hundreds of millions of dollars in a day, you know, kind of backed off for about 2 months there to maybe, you know, $10 to $50 million a day. So, yeah, there's a definite dip. And that's because a lot of the speculators that would have been using GLD as a short-term trading instrument, they went over to, you know, the much more attractive gold, to Bitcoin. However, I think most of those speculators have moved back to gold or perhaps onto some other assets. After the Bitcoin price collapsed, and I don't know that they've really come back yet, and I don't know that they will. We'll just have to see.
Yeah, I think that's going to be an interesting story to watch moving forward. Of course, we have physical gold ETFs. We do not have a Bitcoin ETF yet. We'll see what happens there. Laura, excellent insight as always. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on.
That was ETF.com's Laura Krieger. Let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue our focus on gold. We'll be joined by State Street's Matt Bartolini. This is ETF Prime. Welcome back to ETF Prime. Nate and Connor in studio. Our next guest today is Matt Bartolini, head of Spider America's research at State Street Global Advisors. Of course, State Street is the third largest ETF provider in the country. They offer 140 ETFs with about $600 billion invested, including the most popular physical gold ETF in the world, the Spider Gold Shares, ticker GLD. Also last year, they launched sort of a miniature version of GLD, the Spider Gold Mini Shares, ticker symbol GLDM. That already has over a half $1 billion invested in it. And of course, gold will be the focus of our conversation with Matt today, who is now joining us via phone from Boston. Matt, as always, great having you on the program.
Yeah, great to be back, Nate.
So Matt, let's maybe start with the Spider Gold Mini Shares ETF, GLDM. This launched in June of last year. And as it turns out, you actually undercut your own product on price, the Spider Gold Shares, GLD. So to begin, why do that? What was the rationale here?
Well, I mean, I think going back to June, yeah, the decision to launch GLDM was really inspired by the emphasis that investors have placed on low costs. And part of the success that we've had in restructuring our Spider portfolio ultra-low cost suite. You know, like GLDM, with the portfolio ETFs, we undercut some pretty large products in our suite, in particularly in the U.S. equity exposure. But we understood how clients have started to invest their own capital. There's been an ongoing trend in ETFs, pretty much the secular migration from high-fee mutual funds into low-cost ETF structures. I mean, last year, low-cost ETFs took in 70% of all flows. So we knew that investors are being more conscious about the cost of their selected investment vehicles. And for some investors, while that primary focus will be the deep liquidity benefits and the trading executions that, as well as the optionality that something like GLD has, trading efficiencies, such as tight spreads for either high touch or low touch execution. But then also that optionality is really important because, you know, because it's so liquid, GLD can be used to go very long, short, using options trades. But we do realize that clients are focused on more than just, you know, some of the efficient trading profile. So expense ratio, share price is becoming really important. So while GLDM is a lower fee product, there's also a lower share price product. Lower share price has become a more important evaluation tool, particularly with the rise of digital advice and robo-advisory platforms, where you're constructing minimum accounts, let's say $5,000 across 10 different asset classes. So when we stack up GLDM and GLD together, GLDM is aligned to clients that place a higher emphasis on that low share price and lower expense ratio than that robust liquidity and optionality profile that's currently found within GLD.
Matt, as you alluded to, there has been some rather fierce fee competition around the core building blocks of a portfolio. And certainly for a decent chunk of investors, physical gold ETFs are just that. They are part of a core portfolio. From a layman's perspective, you know, gold is gold, right? So how do you differentiate here besides on price?
Well, I think, again, it goes back to the share price. So we knew that your share price has become a really important evaluation tool. To be able to efficiently allocate capital across a very small asset base is really important, particularly not just with the rise of digital advice platforms, but also low minimum models. Model managers want to have one model with one security selection. They don't want to have to divide between using certain products for the high fee or high minimum accounts versus the low minimum accounts. So when we differentiate, we want to look at all the different aspects of what goes into a successful client experience. And with GLDM, we knew that this was for more long-term buy and hold, not frequently trading clients that use gold as a strategic asset class, that do not move around that tactically with size, and that want to place a higher preference on that lower share price because they might be trading through a no transaction fee platform where you're not being charged commissions on a per share basis. So, you know, as we've done throughout our history at State Street, we want to be able to provide valuable solutions to clients based on their usage type.
Matt, more broadly speaking, for people who perhaps aren't as familiar with the ETF structure itself, can you explain some of the potential benefits here? Why consider a physical gold ETF versus some of the other ways to invest in gold, you know, physical bars and coins?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different ways to invest in gold, right? Like you said, you have the bars, you have coins. Yeah, I think when I take a look at it, it's really from that portfolio perspective. And gold ETFs feel like the right choice. You're able to plug them into an optimizer. You're able to use them alongside small cap stocks, large cap stocks, bonds. You're able to have that transparent portfolio construction process. I mean, you know, for gold bars, you see a lot of that with central banks and other governments as a store of value. And I think if I had gold bars, I think I would have a hard time putting that into a portfolio risk optimizer. Unlike I can do something that, you know, trades every day, ticking on the exchange, very similar to my emerging market small cap ETF as well.
All right, so we're going to visit here shortly with the World Gold Council's Juan Carlos Ortiguez on the gold market itself. But I'd love to hear from you. What do you view as the role of gold in a portfolio? Why own it?
Yeah, I think it just comes back to the basics of portfolio construction, diversification. It's really one of the only free lunches in this market environment or any market environment. And we've done the work from a portfolio perspective. Strategically, investors should have anywhere between 2 and 10% allocation to gold. And we found that within those parameters that led to an improvement of risk-adjusted returns on a multi-asset class portfolio. And when you think about the implementation of it, it's both a way you take a piece away from bonds and stocks because of that low and sometimes negative correlation gold has to those traditional asset classes. So on its face, it's really the strategic diversifier. But then there's also an ability to be tactical to sort of provide, you know, returns. I mean, we're seeing this now and during periods of volatility. You know, since the end of September, gold's up around 10%. Global equities are down 5%. And we've seen a significant shift by investors to be more defensive in their portfolios to improve returns. Pretty much since the end of September, I think gold-backed ETFs have taken in clearly $4 billion.
All right. So I did want to ask you as well about crypto assets like Bitcoin. So we mentioned earlier that, you know, it does seem like, especially with younger investors, there is an interest here. And I think just anecdotally, if you talk to a 30-year-old investor and ask them whether they would prefer gold or Bitcoin, a surprising number may pick Bitcoin. It has been called digital gold. The question I have is, do you see something like Bitcoin or other cryptos as a threat to gold longer term?
No. I mean, we've done some work on this in the past. I mean, this is actually a question we get quite a bit, because most people refer to Bitcoin as gold 2.0, which is just really a miscategorization. I mean, until Bitcoin has demonstrated over time, over eons of years, that it can be an efficient transfer and preserve wealth, I don't think it's really responsible to make that comparison. I mean, Bitcoin has an extremely limited track record. It really, you know, just going back to the portfolio perspective, it doesn't really play a role. I mean, it's very speculative. It's very volatile. And from an investment perspective, gold has numerous unique attributes. We were talking earlier about low correlations, also the ability to hedge against inflation over a long-term period. But then also gold has an industrial but also consumer use case. You know, you have jewelry, you have industrial demand. So I think you take Bitcoin's extremely limited track record, you know, you can't really model it from any sort of efficient statistical analysis. You can't go back, you know, all the way down to 200 BC like you can with gold. So I think any comparison is just not apples to apples.
Well, and I think it's interesting if you look at the market downturn in the fourth quarter of last year, you know, Bitcoin was plummeting right alongside with equities and everything else. It didn't hang in there as really a store of value or as a hedge. So I think to your point, if it's going to become that, it's going to have to prove that over the long term. This is a little bit tongue in cheek, Matt. I know you can't comment on any ETFs in the pipeline, but can you ever envision a scenario where State Street might offer a crypto ETF? Let's say Bitcoin does prove itself sometime down the road. Any thoughts on whether a crypto ETF could come to fruition?
I think based on my comments around comparing Bitcoin to gold, I'd say that's kind of a long
big long shot.
I mean, look, I think we want to be able to provide solutions to clients based on their needs. And if that comes its way, it comes its way. But, you know, right now, I'd say that's a big-time long shot.
Well, Matt, with that, we'll have to leave it there. As always, appreciate your time, and I look forward to chatting again soon. Thank you.
Thanks, Nick.
That was Matt Bartolini, head of Spider America's research at State Street Global Advisors. And you can learn more about both of their gold ETFs by visiting spiders.com. That's SPDRS.com. Let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll be joined by one of my favorite resources on the gold market, the World Gold Council's Juan Carlos Ortiguez. You're listening to ETF Prime. Welcome back to ETF Prime. Nate and Connor in studio. We're now very pleased to be joined by Juan Carlos Artigas, Director of Investment Research at the World Gold Council, who is the leading global authority on gold. I should also note they sponsor the two ETFs we covered in the prior segment, GLD and GLDM. And I would say if you have any interest in gold whatsoever, I highly recommend visiting their website at gold.org. It's just a wealth of information on everything gold-related. And Juan Carlos is one of the best in the business at covering the gold market itself. He's now joining us via phone from New York. Juan Carlos, as always, a pleasure having you on the program.
On the contrary, thank you so much for having me back.
Well, Juan Carlos, let's start by looking at the recent performance of gold. Obviously, during the fourth quarter of last year, we did see the market environment change, a lot more volatility, stocks were down sharply, and with that, we saw the price of gold respond, right? It was up 7-8%. Now, so far this year, even with stocks recovering a large chunk of their losses, gold has still hung in there pretty well. It's only down about 2% or so. I'm curious, just give us your assessment of gold's performance over the past year or so.
Yeah, absolutely, Luke. And I think that is good to put into context. As you said, Q4 was really positive. It was about 7.7% price increase. And actually, so far in January, again, from the end of December to now, we are still slightly higher. So that has been, again, generally positive. Now, interestingly enough, gold was one of the assets that outperformed almost all financial assets during 2018, other than, you know, very high quality treasuries and other bonds. So it was a very good year for gold, in spite of the fact that from the beginning to the end, the gold price was, fairly flat. Again, the important thing here is that, as you said, financial markets experienced a roller coaster year in 2018, you know, and towards the end, there was a flight to quality, a flight to safety. In other words, investors were trying to make sure that they were mitigating risks from the increase in volatility, and gold was one of the assets that is usually used for that purposes. We also, in line with that, we saw quite a bit of interest from investors on buying gold in different forms, including gold-backed ETFs, and that momentum has continued in January.
Well, let's talk more about gold demand. The World Gold Council released their latest gold demand trends report last week, and there are several areas I want to ask you about. First, to me, it was interesting. Central banks added gold at the highest level since 1971 and the second highest total on record. What did you make of that?
That's a continuation of a trend. Of course, the number in itself, I mean, the magnitude of demand, which was 651 tons, was very pronounced, and of course, it's getting a lot of attention. But I think that what is most important is also to understand two things. First, is the ninth consecutive year of net central bank purchases. So this is not a one-off, it happened in 2018 and, you know, it hasn't happened before. It's, again, a continuation of a very consistent pattern of central banks around the world, especially emerging market central banks, utilizing gold to diversify their reserves and again, as a way to, create additional protection and safety to their foreign reserves. That's number one. The second thing is that another important point for 2018 was not only the magnitude of the collective purchases, but also the fact that we saw a diverse set of central banks buying gold. It was not just a few. It was not just the same. It was a very diverse set from different regions adding gold as they more and more perhaps realize the relevance of having gold as part of their reserves.
You mentioned diversifying foreign reserves. I know with Russia in particular, there's been a lot made about them moving away from the dollar. And obviously, the U.S. dollar is the world's reserve currency, but it does seem like some other countries, China and Iran come to mind, they're at least posturing that they want to move away from the dollar. Just high level, is this something to keep an eye on as it relates to gold?
Look, actually, if we go back further and we understand that after the financial crisis in 97, many emerging market central banks, especially the Asian ones, realized that most of their exposure, if not all of their exposure in foreign reserves, was to the dollar. So if you're a portfolio manager, not only a central bank, just any portfolio manager, and then suddenly you realize that you pretty much hold kind of like one asset, that is going against the spirit of diversification and the relevance of having a diversified portfolio. Now, of course, central banks primarily hold sovereign debt, right? So they don't have as many options as a normal investor. But they do have different markets to tap into, and they start to diversify their reserves by adding, you know, bonds from other countries like, you know, Germany or the UK or Japan and so on. But gold is also a source of diversification for them. It's a natural asset for them to hold because it's, even though it's an official currency, it's a de facto currency. It's used as means of exchange, and it holds has held value over a really long time, and that's why you know, it's used you know, again, as a source of capital preservation. So to them, again, you know, when you look at this picture, number one, I think that it has been common practice to diversify. Number two, yes, there is a lot of conversations about, you know, whether you know, the dollar should be the only reserve currency, and whether, you know, other like central banks and all banks, all central banks, not only emerging markets, but all central banks around the world are, you know, utilizing that premise. There are two camps. There are some who believe that it may happen, meaning that we may enter into a period where the dollar is not the only reserve currency, and there are some others who believe that you know, the dollar will remain a strong currency. What is interesting is that when you talk to experts in both camps, they both agree that the role of gold in either scenario is positive for central banks, as you know, as part of, as a complement to other aspects of the reserves.
Our guest is Juan Carlos Ortigas, Director of Investment Research at the World Gold Council. Juan Carlos, going back to the gold demand trends report, I'm curious, what about gold ETFs? It looks like demand picked up in the fourth quarter when we did see some volatility in the stock market. Anything of note here as it relates to gold ETFs?
Yeah, gold ETFs are a, you know, have become a more global or has become an important part of the global gold market. And before, when they were first launched, you know, they were a little bit of a you know, U.S. phenomenon. They were like they were first launched in Australia, just to know that. But later on, they picked up here in the U.S. And at the beginning, they were more of a North American phenomenon. But actually, Europe has started to pick up. Interestingly enough, today there are more than 80 gold-backed ETFs around the world, right? Many of those who are indeed in Europe. So when you look at last year, there are two things to note. Net-net, there were positive flows for gold-backed ETFs in the year, right? But they were there were very steady flows throughout the year coming from Europe, especially as many of these were experiencing, like in Europe, investors in Europe were experiencing high concerns and high uncertainty surrounding many geopolitical aspects, and some, you know, aspects related to Europe like Brexit. So that's number one. In North America, what happened is that you saw some outflows in gold-backed ETFs as investors were a little bit more bullish on Q2 and Q3, where they were, you know, adding more stocks to their portfolio, as we saw. But when the correction happened, as you mentioned, that trend reversed, and you had very strong inflows coming from North America. In fact, in January, so far, we have seen close to about $3 billion worth of inflows around the world from gold-backed ETFs, but the leading region is North America. Again, in particular, U.S. gold-backed ETFs have seen a lot of interest.
All right, with the remaining time we have, I do want to spend some time talking about gold moving forward. And first, this is, I guess, a little bit off topic, but I'm curious, do you have any views on cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin? Because as I'm sure you've seen, Bitcoin has been called quote-unquote digital gold, right? Some view it as perhaps a future replacement to gold. Do you have any opinion at all here?
Yeah, we do. Actually, we've published a couple of notes that are available on our website. You mentioned it before, gold.org. We also created a website that is dedicated to help investors find data and insights on gold, which is called goldhub.com. And again, we've written two notes recently on gold and crypto. I think that the perspective of cryptocurrencies, or in particular things like Bitcoin, as a substitute for gold, were more of a marketing push from the cryptocurrency community. When you actually look in detail at the properties gold has, the fact that it's actually utilized in jewelry, in technology, you know, as part of central bank reserves, you know, there's very well-established market on the one hand. But also, if you look at the performance in periods of risk, like we saw in Q4, cryptocurrencies behaved far more like technology stocks, while gold did behave like, you know, the traditional safe haven that investors usually look for during those periods of risk. So I think that when you look at the role that gold has to play, you know, it is still a really relevant component, and that, you know, cryptocurrencies are a different type of investment, you know, that may meet other objectives, but not, in our view, will replace gold as you know, as an asset for diversification and protection of portfolios.
What about, I've seen where you can actually buy gold through online platforms, as essentially digitizing gold. So you can use an app in mobile wallets to buy and sell gold using digital certificates. Do you think this is a way to sort of combat cryptos, bring the latest technology to the gold market?
Yeah, well, just to be clear, I mean, I think that it's necessarily a matter of combating cryptocurrencies. I think that it's a matter of understanding, you know, what type of investment you have. And I think that there's a lot of positive momentum towards the use of the underlying technology of cryptocurrencies like blockchain into improving financial markets. So there's a positive aspect to that. And you can connect that to other assets, including, you know, gold, right? So it's just, you know, perhaps not confusing specific cryptocurrencies that exist today, like Bitcoin, with the underlying technology. We have actually started to create a set of standards in terms of, you know, how to think about gold in the context of internet and internet purchases. And there are many venues and many, you know, proposals out there that, you know, are starting to gain momentum. And the idea is just to make sure that they follow certain principles to ensure, you know, that investors know exactly what they are buying, how it is structured, to have as much transparency and basically create confidence so that when investors, you know, buy gold through any mean, you know, they are able to understand the underlying investment.
All right, we have just a few minutes left here. As you look ahead in 2019, any potential drivers of gold in particular that you'll be watching, whether positive or negative?
Absolutely. We are focusing on three main things for this year. Number one is financial market instability. You know, as you mentioned at the beginning of the show, even though the stock market has recouped some of its losses, I think that risk aversion, or at least perceptions of risk around the world amongst investors, are still prevalent because there are many things that we need to sort out. And I think that because of that, that's one of the reasons why assets that diversify like gold have remained a point of interest. So we are keeping an eye on that. We're keeping an eye on financial market instability. The second point is, of course, we're keeping an eye on monetary policy, not only that from the Fed, which, you know, they have signaled that they may become more on a, you know, watch and see mode, a little bit more moving towards a neutral stance, meaning, you know, that they may not necessarily be increasing as much, if any, if at all, sorry, this year. So again, wait and see. And also what other central banks are doing, because that may impact the direction of the dollar. And as investors may be aware, there's a negative correlation between the dollar and gold, meaning that, you know, generally speaking, if the dollar strengthens, there can be some headwinds for gold. But if the dollar if the dollar weakens, that can create positive tailwinds for gold. So again, we're watching those two things, and the last trend we're watching are the economic reforms that many countries, especially in emerging markets, have started to establish for the past few years to improve the growth of their economies over the long run, not necessarily just over the next quarter or over the next few quarters, but over the long run. And because that tends to be positive for gold demand as a form of jewelry, technology, or as a means of savings.
As it relates to your second point on monetary policy, my understanding is typically a more dovish approach would be a positive tailwind for gold. Is that typically how that plays out? I know there had been some concern last year that if the Fed in particular here in the U.S. was too aggressive, that would be a negative for gold. Any just high-level thoughts on interest rates and gold?
Yeah, absolutely. So generally speaking, there are four big drivers of gold, big categories. The first one is economic expansion or wealth and economic expansion and the positive link to consumption. The second is market risk and uncertainty that we covered. The third one is opportunity cost, meaning, you know, how much or what investors are investing. If they're investing in gold, you know, what could they be investing instead of? And sometimes when interest rates increase, the point is, well, would that lead investors to invest more in bonds or to leave money in the bank because interest rates are increasing, right? So generally speaking, the higher the opportunity cost of investing in gold, the more, you know, a tailwind can that it can create. So in other words, higher interest rates tend to lead investors to put money or to leave money in the bank, right? Again, as we move more or as the Fed is moving more towards a neutral stance where they may or may not be increasing rates, you know, that will likely or at least historically has been supportive for gold demand as the interest rates are not increasing as much.
Well, Juan Carlos, with that, we'll have to leave it there. As always, just tremendous insight into the gold market. Really appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Juan Carlos Artigas, Director of Investment Research at the World Gold Council. And if you want a copy of their latest gold demand trends report, again, you can do so by visiting gold.org. And as I mentioned, they have a ton of other great info on the gold market there as well. Just an excellent resource. Kind of restarted the show by talking about how gold does march to the beat of its own drum. Mm-hmm. You know, look, in the fourth quarter of last year when we saw the market volatility, gold did respond favorably. It was up almost 8%. There have been periods of time where, of course, the market's gone down. Gold hasn't responded. It is an uncorrelated asset. But look, because of that, it can add some diversification to a portfolio.
And gold investors since, you know, 2009 when U.S. stocks bottomed out and this recovery, you know, in a rising environment across most equities, gold hasn't done much. You know, and that's okay because it's supposed to do well when there's risk, when there's fear, and it certainly shined in the fourth quarter when you look at global equities down, you know, 10% plus, especially when you look outside the U.S. and gold up almost 8%. That's huge outperformance and what you look for in a small hedge position. We like to consider gold almost as a little bit of portfolio insurance, but it's not a pure play like it is, you know, long-term bonds, right? Because Juan Carlos just went through all of these other examples of what can impact gold and its expansion, consumption, interest rates. It's more complicated than that. But that was a great take on gold in a time where its performance is getting people's attention.
Yeah, Juan Carlos, always fantastic on the gold market. Really, all the guests today, I thought, did a great job covering all the ins and outs of gold and gold ETFs. That'll do it for ETF Prime. I want to thank our exclusive sponsor, Legg Mason. You can visit leggmason.com to learn more about their broad range of investment strategies. Podcasts of ETF Prime are available at etfprime.com, etf.com, iTunes, and Spotify. You can follow us on Twitter at Nate Geraci and at CKelly1980. Great show next week. We'll talk Schwab ETFs with DJ Tierney, who's managing director at Charles Schwab Investment Management. He'll also discuss the importance of doing your homework before buying an ETF. And then Jacob Hutchinson, managing director at Premise Capital, will spotlight their Frontier Advantage Diversified Tactical ETF. Until then, have a great week, everyone.